The Law of Equivalent Exchange. This is Tim in Tokyo reading Fullmetal Alchemist in English, published by Viz.
And this is Patrick in Kumamoto, where it's nice and muggy. And I'm reading Hagane no Renkin Jutsushi by Hiromu Arakawa in the original Japanese by Gan Gan Comics.
Right. And we're recording this on Patrick's birthday, which will have been over a month ago by the time you hear this, because we're stacking episodes before I go on vacation. But happy birthday.
Thank you. Thank you. By the time you hear this, it'll be too late to send me tons of cash for my birthday. So I will just accept well wishes. And a deluxe set of Full Metal Alchemist to replace my. Where did you get yours? Mine. I bought the whole set in one fell swoop from a comic rental place. You know, they get rid of their extras once a series has been out for a while.
Well, I think I just got mine on Amazon back when I worked on the base, and they said I had an American address. At first, I think I mentioned before, I was reading the books from the base library, but then their collection ended at about volume 17 or 18. And so then I was buying the ones after that. And then before I quit working at the base, I bought all the early ones, the ones I had originally read at the library. So then I had the complete set.
There's like, you know, these have been through the ringer as far as, you know, like they were rented out and they were put in a place where obviously sun hit them. So like there's yellowing. I mean, the pages are perfectly fine, but there's some yellowing, but they're all first editions pretty much.
Wow.
Which is crazy. Well, it gets less crazy the later you get in the series, because they tend to put out like less reprints later on in the series. You know, they keep reprinting the early ones.
A lot of people never finish.
Yeah, they keep reprinting the early ones. That's why when I was collecting the Galaxy Express in the original, like I had the hardback editions that had the whole series, but I was also collecting the individual tankobon books. And as soon as a used bookstore gets a 17 and an 18, they don't sell them individually. They will get the other ones and they'll make a set. So you have to buy a whole set. So it took me years to complete because I refused to buy it online, and I wanted to come across it organically because I already had the series. So it's not like I needed it to finish reading, but you know, we all collect in different ways, don't we? I'm curious what how other people, you know, how they collect. There's a beautiful deluxe edition of this, and one of these days I might just splurge.
Yeah, I mean, these, you know, the later volumes, I have, I think, first editions, English first editions. This one is a first printing July 2009, volume 19 that we're just starting. We were noticing that most of the other volumes have four chapters in them, this one has five. But it's no thicker, I don't think. It's just that some of these were relatively short chapters.
Relatively short, and each story shorter than the last, which is interesting.
So they get shorter and shorter as you go through
the volume. It's a countdown to an explosion or something. The cover, we have somebody that was in the ad for this volume, right? And we find out in this chapter who that is.
Right.
And there's also something on the table with him, which in this picture, you wouldn't notice it right away. But even though it's like the kind of the center of the picture, but you realize that it's, you know, it's quite important later on.
Right. But without reading the book first, you just look at the cover and is that Ed? Kind of looks like Ed, but no, I don't think it's Ed. He's older than Ed.
Yeah. I like talking about, you know, when we start a new volume, and sometimes we forget, but I like to talk about the cover. On the spine, of this one, we have what looks like Pride.
Yeah, or yeah, the shadow or whatever they call
that. Like it could be Pride. And then when we open the inset, we've got Arakawa.
Mm-hmm.
And this cow has glasses, which is important. She's saying, if the gods gave me one of something, one thing, like if you can have anything you want, what's the one thing you want? She said, I would want a national library. Yeah, you know, the library that has to keep one copy of everything in it.
In English. I want Japan's National Diet Library.
Yeah, that's the one.
This is how it's translated. And in the cartoon, she's saying all the books I could ever want.
Yeah, she's like, "Hon yomi hodai," which, yeah, all you can read. But what does this remind you of? Does it remind you of a certain Twilight Zone episode? Or is it Outer Limits?
I don't know.
Okay, Burgess Meredith. Every person has disappeared from the face of the earth.
I've heard about that. Yeah, I haven't watched it, but...
Okay. Well, yeah, he's like, now I have all the time in the world to read, and he breaks his glasses, and he can't do anything without them.
Okay. So, this is chapter 74, The Dwarf in the Flask.
Mm-mm.
Now... on the first page, which was, of course, color in the original, in Gangan Comics, Ed and Miles are talking about Kimblee and the symbols on his hands and how the two triangles fit together when he claps to make a hexagram, the symbol that represents all of the four elements. So by doing that, he makes a transmutation circle.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? This is one of the few times we get an idea of there being some kind of system to these circles, you know? I mean, I'm glad there's not an overabundance of system talk, because that's what drove me away from Hunter x Hunter. It's like once they really got into describing all the... like, it's like he was basically designing a video game. And it was... if you like that kind of thing, great. But for me, it was just like, I'm bored. And so I quit.
So Miles wonders,
this is cool.
Yeah, if they took out one of his hands, he couldn't transmute. Ed says, I think so, but he has a philosopher's stone. That makes things a lot trickier.
Yeah.
And then the rest of the chapter, we never see Ed, Al, Winry, any of those people who were the focus of the previous chapter. They're just not in it after this page.
But you do see what? You see,
well, yeah, we have one a splash person. Page.
You see one person from this splash page.
Olivier Armstrong.
Yeah, that's the one.
But yeah, the splash, and I'll put it up on the site. Although it doesn't seem to come through in the podcast notes in the podcast app, which is kind of a pain. But anyway, we see Ed, Mei Chang, Armstrong, Al, Winry, Scar, and a metal fist. Is that Buccaneers?
No. Look, if you look carefully.
Oh, I see. Okay, there are windows in this thing that's showing Ed's arm. Okay, I see.
Yeah, I think I've seen this art on something else, like a clear file folder where it's been colored with flat...
Found it online. I'll put the color version in, but actually it's just like the backgrounds are several different colors.
And like maybe a stark white or something like that.
Yeah, it's a kind of a... the people are colored in kind of a... what color is that? Kind of a light
chartreuse.
Peach.
No, I don't know.
Kind of a light peach color, not pure white. But then their backgrounds are either red, aqua. Al's background is blue. Winry's background is sort of a dark pink. Yeah, kind of interesting. All right, so now we're back in the normal black and white pages, and those guys from Central who are at Briggs are asking around about Lieutenant General Raven. Have you seen him?
Yeah, this guy is like Yoki's badass cousin or something. He's got this. He does have a mustache, and he's got little Tintin hair. You know, look at this anachronism. Isn't that great? The coffee pot, which is obviously very modern looking, because it's glass, and on the old fashioned stove. Now what's Now, the fact is, though, is that one of the restaurants that we go to here for, like, their brick oven pizza, they have a stove just like this. So it's like it's come full circle. So you can actually see something like this, a modern pot of coffee on a old-fashioned-looking stove.
And Buccaneer, of course, Buccaneer was away, right, while that happened. He doesn't know, I think. I'm remembering correctly the sequence of events, but he says, last I seen him, he and Major General Armstrong were heading down into the lowest level of the fort alone. And the two guys from Central look at each other.
Don't you want to know, looking at Buccaneer, which arm he's got on? It's hiding behind his cape. I want to know what arm he's got on.
Yeah. So now we're with Armstrong, who is at Central and runs into Mustang. And
she's not happy about it. She's no. Like,
never expected to see a greenhorn like you working at Central HQ. What kind of strings did you pull? And he says, actually, I think I was chosen for my special skills, ma'am. And there's this sort of atmosphere around them, this kind of swirling smoke, and there's a sound that's like a bzz, bzz, bzz in the English.
Right.
And the guy standing nearby has the word intense floating around him.
Yeah. So in Japanese, she's like, which connections did you use? And then he says, might have been my, you know, my hard work. I mean, he doesn't come right out and say it, but he's like, I don't know. Might have been my hard work. And, but they're obviously like butting heads here. And the guy is saying, what is this atmosphere that's happening over here? You know, like what's happening to the air? Which is, we hear a lot about the air.
Yeah. So she mentions that she was summoned by the president and she may be there at Central for a while. And so he asks her to dinner. She says, your treat? I'll go, provided you don't mind me eating you into bankruptcy.
And he's like, yep, she could do it. Yeah. Like, her threats are, they might be idle, but nobody around her takes that chance. They're like, I'm not gambling on that.
And he mentioned sending her flowers, which I think he's kind of hinting at knowing about that florist who, like, catered to generations of the Armstrong family. But she doesn't seem to get the reference.
I thought it was hilarious because I also thought, does he still have some leftovers he's trying to pawn off on her?
Yeah, they're probably pretty brown by now. So she goes to see Bradley in his huge empty office. Are they like bringing in furniture later? I don't know. I mean, we got his desk and a bookshelf and a picture on the wall and some, what are those?
A bunch guns? Of swords.
Swords.
Those swords. Are swords. Okay. Those are all swords. And I want to know what the books are, you know? I want to know. It's so Bradley looks super serious.
Yeah, and he wants to ask about the disappearance of General Raven. She decides...
Yeah, he cuts right to the chase. Yeah,
she decides there's no point in lying. So she makes it clear what she did, but saying it's because Raven was such a careless fool who, you know, was too loose with information. His lips were loose enough to sink a fleet, she says.
Well, she says there's... Basically, there's... I won't be able to trick him. So that's why they translated it as no point in lying, because, you know, she knows that he'll see right through it.
Yeah. But so she justifies it as being because Raven was too loose with information. And then she says that she wants to ask that she be assigned to Raven's old position on the board, which kind of cracks Bradley up. Well played, he says. You've got a nerve.
Now, what's this? I don't quite get. From the bottom of the page, we're hearing a background sound. Go, 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 go.
Okay. Yeah, in English, it's dom, 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 which I took to be either a heartbeat or sort of like incidental music in a comic, just, you know, showing increasing tension. Because I don't think it's a real sound. I think it's just meant to convey increased tension. Because the letters, at least in the English, the words are getting louder. They're on this page.
Yeah, it's getting louder
small,
in Japanese too.
Little small dom dom dom, and you turn the page, and they're bigger. As she goes into the room with the other military guys, and then the door closes. We're outside the door, and then instead of dom, it's doom.
Yeah, I just don't. I'm not feeling it as like the, you know, like I think that your hypothesis is probably the most, the one that makes the most sense, but it's, yeah, I mean, I guess it's supposed to be the tension in this room of her facing all like the horde of evil, the axis of evil here, but the crescendo is when the door closes behind her, which, you know, that makes sense as a final doom, but the build up to it doesn't quite fit to me.
Okay,
so yeah, my two cents. So then
we have a page at Briggs. The guys from Central are apparently leaving, and they're saying that if those guys think they can collar us, they've got another think coming. And like, they're, even though Armstrong is gone, they're going to be true to her and not to whoever the new boss is.
Oh, when we get to see Buccaneer's hand. It's got claws on it.
Yeah, it's kind of on the knuckles. There are these.
Yep. He's got knuckle claws. Did they go snicked? That is the question.
Well, in English, the sound effect is snick with no T, so it's not quite Wolverine.
Because it's not even a snick sound in Japanese, so obviously the translator was like, I'm going to hint.
Yeah.
Because it's more like the sound of armor, like the sound of metal, creaking on metal. It's more of a creaky kind of squeaky sound. I wouldn't say squeaky, but creaky at least.
Okay, but yeah, I think this translator was definitely thinking Wolverine here.
Which, you know what? Props to that. Props to that. Props to that for your for connecting with the U.S. readership.
So then we're in the cafeteria at Central, and Hawkeye is eating, and then Mustang comes in and sits with her, and she seems kind of down, you know, as she seemed ever since she realize the thing with Selim Bradley. It's kind of spooked. But yeah, she seems sort of sad or depressed here. And Mustang has some paper and a pencil, and he's saying, since I was deprived of my assistant, I have to resort to doing paperwork over lunch to get caught up.
You know what this reminds me of, this scene? It reminds me of Death Note. Did you ever read it?
Yeah.
Or see it?
I read it.
Do you remember the potato chip bag?
Oh. It's been a long time.
we're not here to spoil everything, but let's just say that somebody was writing secret stuff inside a potato chip bag.
Okay. Yeah, it's been more like 15 years ago that I read it. I need to read it.
Tim, are we going to have to do another podcast? Or we have to wait? No, we have to wait 5 more years so I can forget what happens.
Kumar and I did like the whole thing in one Deconstructing Comics episode back then.
Literally impossible to do.
Well, I mean, we somehow did it, but yeah, I think you could probably break it into chapters and do a podcast series on it. So she's sounding kind of dismissive of him.
Right.
Bradley doesn't slack off. I guess some people are just more capable than others, sir. And he says, I don't,
she's ripping on him.
I don't like where this conversation is going. And he invites her to get a bite to eat sometime. And she says, isn't that what we're doing right now, sir? Because they're sitting there eating in the cafeteria.
And he's like, strike two.
Yeah, that's harsh. I'm 0 for 2 today. Because he mentions that Armstrong turned him down. So then she goes into this long conversation with a lot of different names. Most of them are names that we know. Scar, Elric Brothers, Havoc, and so on. And it's interesting because, like, we get a page and a half of just these wide panels where we don't even see their faces. We're seeing things in their surroundings, like the cooks and the pots and pans, you know, the food being cooked and being ready for dishwashing, and the panels are all kind of gray. And then all these word balloons on top of them. And when I first reading this, I'm like, what? This is really weird. What's going on here?
Yeah, it's like a too long didn't read situation, you know, because once I figured out, because I did figure it out in the middle, what was going on. I just kind of skimmed through the gray panels until I got to, you know, until I got to the regular, our regular program.
So then she, you see that he's writing. When we come back and see them, you see that he's writing on that paper that he had there because supposedly he doesn't have enough time to get his work done otherwise. So she excuses herself and he says, not much time left to use the restroom. And then we see him in a restroom stall, not using the stall, not, you know, using the toilet, but sitting there.
Thank you, Arakawa, for not showing us that. I appreciate
with
it.
With his pants on, continuing to write and going through the names that she mentioned. Now, I'm not sure why he couldn't have done this at the table, other than, I guess, so that nobody would see the... Somebody might oversee? Might see the message over his shoulder.
Well, also, it looks like he's, you know, he's figuring out the code. That's, it does kind of look like, you know, he's... but here's another anachronism. You have an old-timey toilet with a newfangled toilet paper dispenser. Just anything goes in this world.
Right. Well, it's kind of like Kiki's Delivery Service, where you got all these things that don't fit together time-wise.
We get all the spelling of Miles. Everything is spelled Buccaneer. Everything is spelled pretty typically.
Yeah, so he's going through all the names, and then he stops and is sweating and staring at his paper. And we find out the whole deal at the end. We'll talk about
where it says then. Where it says, "Yes, I will go to dinner with you," or it says, "You stink," or "You need to lose 5 pounds." did you see A Christmas Story?
No,
the movie.
No.
Oh my God, Tim, what is wrong with you?
I was barely even aware of it until recently.
Christmas Story is one of those movies that I force people to watch with me every year. you know, and but one of the interesting things about that movie is the there's a scene with a radio, and it's doing the Little Orphan Annie show on the radio, and the main character finally gets his decoder ring. And so he's writing down, he's in the bathroom just like this. He's in the bathroom and he's figuring out, and everybody's knocking on the bathroom, "Let us in," and he's like, just wait, and he's trying to figure out the message that Annie has. She's like, "She must need help," and it said, "Eat more Ovaltine." But what that little bit did was it got me curious about old time radio, and now I'm like a huge fan, and I've listened to hundreds of hours of it. So it's you never know what's going to do the trick.
Are you tired of fanboy comics podcasts? Looking for a show that really appreciates the comic storytelling medium and how it works? A show that looks at comics from any genre and anywhere in the world, comparing the storytelling techniques of different creators in different comics cultures, with manga, newspaper strips, European comics, and more discussed alongside mainstream U.S. comics. A show that includes talks with well-known creators like James Robinson and Dan Jurgens, and with less famous creators that you really should know. And hey, we'll even critique your comic. If you're looking for that show, then you're looking for Deconstructing Comics, and it's right here at deconstructingcomics.com. Also available in iTunes and on Stitcher. This is Tim saying check out our show on Wednesdays. That's Deconstructing Comics. So now we're in Dublith, home of Izumi Curtis, and we see Mason, who works for her and her husband at the meat shop. And
it's called meat.
Yeah, it just says meat. And you know, say, talking to customers and whatever. And then some guys from Central show up and say, is the alchemist Izumi Curtis here? She's out traveling with her husband. I don't know when she'll be back. And they're kind of suspicious, thinking he might be trying to hide something. But he's like, I told you they're not here. Who are you people anyway? Showing up out of the blue and demanding to see Ms. Curtis.
Oh, and they look super friendly, these guys.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so cordial.
Super friendly.
Whereas envoys of President Bradley. And Mason's kind of surprised, the president. And then we see a guy in a hooded poncho on a roof.
Yeah, like a roof from the building next, like the next building and over. But you can see his little tail poking out, so immediately I knew.
Okay.
That he is one of these Chimera dudes.
Yeah, it's been such a long time since we saw him. I didn't catch that until next page, then I realized who he was. But he recognizes these men, the president's men, as the one who took Greed away. That was back in, like, volume 8-ish. I tried to look it up. I could only find one appearance. I know there were more appearances. I couldn't seem to find them. I found what I think was the last appearance of this guy, whose name I don't remember. It's right at the beginning of volume 8, chapter 30.
He was either he's like an alligator, isn't he?
Ooh, kind of a lizard. He has claws and a tail, but his face looks...
Oh, he doesn't like have normally a spiky tail like an alligator or a crocodile would have. So it's, maybe more like a lizard. But he's got claws. Does have claws.
So when the president's men leave, we see that this Chimera is clinging to the bottom of their car. Maybe he's thinking he can find Greed. I mean, he doesn't know that Greed died in Volume 8. So maybe he's thinking he can rescue Greed or something.
Wants to find his friends.
And then we get a brief scene in Father's lair with Lean and Selim Bradley, Pride. And they're noticing that Father seems to be asleep. And then it sort of fades into this other scene, almost as if Father is dreaming. Is that kind of what's suggested?
Yes, this looks like a crossfade. Mm-hmm. You know, like if it was film, it's like a cross dissolve where one scene fades into the other.
Yeah.
Just the way that the hatching is done here. This is, you know, this reminds me of something. Okay, so the other day on Facebook, a guy I know that researches pre-war American comics published in Japan. And his big thesis, which he has lots of really solid support for, was that the comic strip bringing up Father was one of the longest running comics in Japan at that time.
Mm.
And it was super popular and obviously a huge influence on all Japanese comics going forward. And so his big deal is that you can't just tie this direct line from like old Japanese art to Japanese comics. The input of that, those American comic strips that were translated into Japanese is too huge to be ignored like it currently is. But what this reminded me of was, is that that same guy was looking at a comic panel from the 90s. I think it was GTO. And he was saying that the bike looks like it was somehow computer drawn or computer manipulated or something like that. And I told him that, no, in the 90s, like, I know plenty of comic artists that love to draw detailed mecha. They didn't need to depend on computers. They can draw very tight mechanical stuff that looks like it was done with Illustrator or whatever. And they do a wonderful job, bang up job. So he was just kind of looking into the history of computer manipulation of comics. But that's this screen tone technique. This is exacto on screen tone. It's not computer manipulation. You know, this is a screen tone assistant that knows what they're doing.
So the scene that we fade into, the setting looks kind of like how we would visualize biblical times. And, you know, it's a market, and everybody's wearing kind of loose robes and stuff. It's
a lot of sashes. There's a lot of sashes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So doesn't have any of the more modern things of the usual Full Metal scenery, like the 1920s cars or anything. And so we get this first page is basically just scene setting. And then we see this guy from the cover of the book, with what appears to be blonde hair with a ponytail, but he's not Ed. And he's scrubbing the floor.
The window has bars on it, by the way.
Yeah. And no, I forgot to mention in the scene with Bradley and Armstrong, when he was talking to her, suddenly his font changed. I'm not sure how this came through in Japanese, but after he said, "I like it, you fight well, human," then his font changed to this kind of weirder font where he says, "Very well, I'll give you his position. In exchange, I'm putting one of my own men in charge of Fort Briggs. Agreed?" So it seems to suggest, like, Philosopher's Stone in him is having more input at that point.
Well, I would say that he's dropped the facade of humanity. Mm. You know, once he calls her human.
He calls her human, yeah.
Establishing that she's different than him. He goes from, "Hi, I'm Bruce Wayne," to, "I'm Batman."
Yeah. So in this scene with the blonde guy scrubbing the floor, now someone is talking to him in that same font. Mm-hmm. Saying, "You there, young man. Hey, hello."
It is not the same font in Japanese. It is a different font, but the font that Bradley is using is a slightly scarier font.
Okay.
But this is, yeah, it's definitely, it's a different font than typical.
So he can't figure out where the voice is coming from, so he keeps scrubbing until finally he's filled in that the voice is coming from this Makoto Kurosuke from Totoro.
Are they called? They have a different name in English, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, I can't remember. I've seen it in Japanese black, a lot more than
little
in English.
Little black dust bunnies.
Yeah, I don't remember what they're called in English.
Have you thought about going to see the new Ghibli?
I don't know. I might. Totoro I could follow in Japanese fine, but some other Miyazaki movies are hopeless for me in Japanese.
The recent ones, it's probably a little bit more difficult. It's not, you know, three-year-old girls
it's
talking.
It's not Doraemon. So. Doraemon I can handle. Or Anpanman, but...
I cannot handle them, but not because of the language. I want to lose my, like, Nobita drives me up the wall.
So, anyway, the guy looks at this black thing in the jar and says, "I'm busy, talk to me later." And the Makoto Kurosuke is surprised that his appearance doesn't shock this guy. But, yeah, he's just kind of whatever.
Yeah. Hey, I'm a talking black cloud. Aren't you curious?
So he asks the guy's name, and he just says number 23. He doesn't have a name because he's a slave. Mm. So then the...
Oh, but it's funny in Japanese because he says, I'm number 23, Nijusan Go. Okay, Go meaning the, like, number, right? Mm-hmm. And then the Black Cloud says, Nijusan-san? He puts a san in the back. Okay. It's kind of funny.
Yeah, that doesn't work in English. The Makoto Kurosuke tries to define slave. He says, you mean those, in quotation marks, those who have been denied their freedom and rights, whose ownership is transferred and sold to others as a commodity? He says, transferred? And the Black Puff goes on, a convenience by sale, gift, or otherwise of real or personal property to another. And he says, huh? You're not very smart, are you? Shut up.
It's not really a haul in Japanese. It's more like, okay, whatever. Because okay. It's a, like that, one of those.
And so apparently this Black Puff was made from blood that was taken from the slave.
So he's the father. Oh.
He's the Fonz? Is that what you said?
Yes, that's exactly what I said, Tim. Hey.
But yeah, he remembers that the master took a lot of blood from him, but he didn't seem to be really aware of what happened to it.
Now I'm curious about this master dude.
Yeah, I kind of blipped over that before, but yeah, who is this master? And the Black Puff says, in return for your kindness, I'll grant you a name. He mentions some other possibilities that are dismissed as being too long. So
what is this? Bombastus.
Yeah. Bombastus. Bombastus von. And, yeah. Too long.
It's probably an L, not an R. Probably. I don't know. But, yeah, Bombastus is pretty cool. He says, that is too long.
So he goes for a short name, Von Hohenheim. Now, in the... We talked about the...
Van.
So, yeah, we talked about in the coming attractions at the end of the previous volume, they had relettered this balloon because we couldn't see the context. So they moved some of the dialogue into this balloon, relettered it, and wrote Van Hohenheim. But everywhere else, it seems like in the English, he's referred to as Von Hohenheim. So I don't know why they're going for V-O-N.
There's one way we could think of it is that the katakana A sound is more correct for O's, like hot, yeah, right?
Because it's not Von Hohenheim, as a lot of Japanese would probably read it if they saw this, but...
Yes. But it's a lot. I think van is the van. The A is also pronounced A in Japanese, and probably pronounced that way in Dutch or German as well. Mm. You know.
But von. Again, I feel here like Von is supposed to be his first name.
I am agreeing. I agree with you because he's not. He gave him this Theophrastus Bombastus name, and that's obviously two names, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so Van Hohenheim, this is obviously two names.
Yeah.
Now we figured out the mystery. That was one of the things that we had wondered about last time, and I think this clears it up.
Okay, so now we know that this guy is Hohenheim. Von or Van, whatever, but he's Hohenheim.
I think we should call him Vinny, just to be... You know, if you can't figure it out, make up your own stuff. That's what I always do.
Headcanon. Black Puff is trying to get him interested in getting his freedom.
Yep. Or trying to get him to sign up for a credit card. Don't fall for it, kids. Let me tell you how incredibly naive I was in college, in my first year of college. I was only in there like a week, and I signed up for one of these stupid credit cards for that. It came with a pair of cheap ass sunglasses. Okay. And I signed up for the credit card And like an idiot, I was convinced by my boss to take a loan on the credit card and buy merchandise from him and then sell it at a flea market because he needed some quick cash. Mm. And I ended up going into debt because of this stupid, cheap-ass sunglasses. So don't listen to black puffballs in flasks. That's my advice.
Yeah, the black puffball is saying, I will give you knowledge. What should I call you? You can call me Homunculus, the dwarf inside the flask. And now we see the eye and the big teeth that we've seen associated with pride often. Or also like in the cave under Briggs, the tunnel.
Homunculus, actually, the etymology is a tiny human produced artificially. The homo, of course, like homo sapiens, meaning person, and then the culus makes it diminutive.
Mm-hmm.
So like it's like tiny male human, but used with a sense like mankind.
Okay, and then the flashback is interrupted. We come back to the present for the last page when we see Mustang. The message, the names that Hawkeye was saying, he'd had to write down the first letter of each name to get the message, which was Selim Bradley is a homunculus. And he's now burning the paper so nobody else can find it, using his flame alchemist glove. And at first he's saying this must be some kind of joke. That's impossible, but lately nothing is impossible. Yeah, now I was wondering, how is this handled in Japanese? The first letter of each name. It's a very English
thing. It's written in Roman letters. Bradley is written as Bladley.
Bladley.
B-L. But other than that, it says Selim Bradley is homunculus.
With no
No
Hmm. So when Hawkeye was talking before, the names would have been all like katakana, right?
They're all katakana.
Okay.
But they're all like foreign sounding names pretty much.
But I wonder if something was added in the English to make it work correctly would be Bradley with an R and to include the article a.
Well, let's see. Lysander, Armstrong. So what's before Armstrong? Rebecca. So it should be an R.
Yeah.
So that's we're saying Mustang is. Mustang is wrong. He's spelling Rebecca with an L. and then Edgar.
Let's see.
Edgar, Ida Sugar. So. Ida is I. I see. Ida is. And
yeah,
then it
English
goes right
it was,
to Havoc. It goes right to Havoc. There's
I was Ice Queen. S was Susan. Oh, okay. She talked to Susan and Andrew too, sir. There's your A in English. I'm probably different in Japanese. So
it says, why would they change the name? So it's Lysander, Edgar, Ida, what's wrong? Why not say Ida? What's wrong with, sugar? Well, sugar is kind of weird, but...
I think because Ice Queen is referring to Armstrong, and it's making a reference back to Armstrong.
I guess. But there's no reference in the original, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then it goes, but she does mention Havoc.
Okay, but Oscar, before Havoc, Mike. Before Havoc.
There's nothing. There's no...
Okay. There's no Andrew.
No Andrew.
So you have Ida for I, and then who's... Is there a Susan for S?
No, it's Sugar.
Sugar, okay. Okay, but yeah, she talked to Susan and Andrew too, sir. So, yeah, so there's your So, she, they did have to make some changes in the translation, but...
Mm-mm.
Okay. All right. So that's it for this chapter. Sound effects. Oh, gee, I haven't figured out my sound effect.
I figured it out. I figured it out right this second.
Okay.
It's the sound of smiling evilly from the little person in the flask.
Mm-hmm.
In Japanese, it's going, nee.
Yeah,
which is like a very strongly forced smile. It's the sound of the muscles being pulling your lips apart away from your teeth.
Okay.
Nee.
Yeah, it's just grin in English.
I believe that there were some knights that used to say this.
We are the knights who say nee.
Yes, Monty Python. Well, I'm kind of glancing through here. Some things that I hadn't noticed before. So when Hohenheim is scrubbing, it's scrubba, scrubba. When Mustang is in the restroom, we have splish, splush, and floosh.
Eesh.
As water sounds in the restroom. I don't know. I kind of like floosh.
I know. I knew you would.
Okay. I think I have to go with that.
It's from the door. It's from like the... Not cubicle. What would you call this?
Stall.
Stall. It's from the stall one over, looks like.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
We know what he's doing in there. That whoever's
well, it is
door.
A restroom.
It is a restroom. You know what? A lot, they really don't encourage you. Like, I used to work for Yahoo Japan, and then they have timed lights in the stalls. To kind of remind you to get your ass back to work. But I used to take naps in there. So I used it as it's supposed to use it because it is a rest room.
Mm-hmm.
And I would rest just a little bit before I would go back to my desk.
And then you wake up and it was dark because you had not been moving. And
that's right.
Yeah, motion-sensitive light turned off.
That's right, that's right.
Yeah, those things always seem to be set like for too short of a time. But anyway,
yeah, this one was about it was exactly like 41 pages and 40 pages, I guess.
40.
But it kind of because there was a lot of the code scene and just a lot of there's a lot of silent panels. I wouldn't say they were completely silent. They had, like, sound effects, etc. But it kind of went pretty quickly. But we got a little bit of the world building. We got, you know, the information about Kindley's circle, power circle. And we got some background on the origins of both Hohenheim and... the homunculi. We got some hints about what's to come. We got to worry about Armstrong, you know, where she is. She's in the mouth of the tiger, as they say in this. We would say mouth of the lion, but they call it like mouth of the tiger. And I want to call it barracuda. It's buccaneer. Buccaneers say, okay, so it's going to be like tiger versus bear. Which is not a fight you get to see that often.
No.
Tiger versus bear.
Only in Jungle Book.
Oh, that's right. There is a bear.
I don't know how many bears there are in India. That's always kind of surprised me that Baloo was there. But
yeah. Well, you know, Baloo was a member of DuckTales. And so, you know, maybe he was on an adventure. No, I don't know. But that Baloo, that's the Baloo in DuckTales, isn't it?
DuckTales was a little too late for me.
Me too. I didn't watch the show. But I know there's a whole generation that grew up on it and then just love it to death.
Mm-hmm.
What's so funny is that Larry... You know Larry King, right? Larry King Live?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, Baloo is on DuckTales. But he's, yeah, got brown hair in DuckTales. Maybe he's just a relative. Larry King had... Danny Pudi, who I know from Community, and he was on the new updated version of DuckTales, and Larry King was like acting him, what's it like to be big success in Hollywood? He's like, you know, I'm a voice on a cartoon, right? <It's> like, it's DuckTales. It's not, you know, I'm not Brad Pitt. It's don't. Hilarious stuff. Yeah, I enjoyed this one. Uh-huh. I'm looking forward to what's coming up next.
Yeah, I'm now, since I've forgotten a lot, I'm interested in who Hohenheim's master is. Is it Father? And why does he look the same as Father? Well, I suppose if he was formed by this black puffy thing, he might have used Father as a pattern and kind of cloned Father.
Or he might be, I don't know. Is Father a homunculi? We don't know, do we?
A homunculus? Well, I assumed that he was, but maybe, I don't know. We'll find out.
Yeah. I don't know.
He's not normal, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of the relationship between those characters that we don't know yet.
Well, in this whole series, we have a lot of upending of that hierarchy. So you've got Ed, who treats his dad like a errant kid, mm-hmm. you know, that he wants to kick to the curb. And then you have the Bradley son and father, where the son is actually the older one.
Mm.
Who has the higher position.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of that kind of upending, which is super interesting from like a cultural theory point of view, like monster theory. Mm. That's what monsters do, is that they threaten those categories. And, you know, that kind of patriarchy and like that kind of hierarchy, which is super important in Japan. It's interesting just, you know, when a series kind of challenges it and mm-hmm. throws other different relationships into the mix. It's kind of cool.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, thanks for listening, and don't forget the law of equivalent exchange, which means
you get what you pay for. Nee.
All right. See you next time.
Next time.
Our theme is Winterfiend by Cryosyncope. You can follow us on Twitter at LOEEPodcast or email us at LOEEPodcast@deconstructingcomics.com. Support our show on Patreon at patreon.com/deconcomics. See you in 2 weeks. The Law of Equivalent Exchange is a production of deconstructingcomics.com.